Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, it is my privilege to welcome a very, very accomplished technology professional from Cupertino, USA, Mr. VR Firoz. Firoz, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Firoz is the Senior Vice President and Head of the SAP Academy in the US. He has been the Managing Director of SAP Labs in India. He's a highly recognized and awarded individual. He's a member of the exclusive Young Global Leaders Fraternity from the World Economic Forum. He's the founder of the India Inclusion Summit. He's the co-author of three books, Gifted, Innovating the World, and Globalization Advantage. And the third one is Grit, the Major Story. So Firoz, you know, at such a young age, you've achieved so much. What would you say are the three key milestones in your life or career?
Thank you. I mean, you've made me reflect on my entire journey. But I'll probably start by saying, which may sound a little odd, but actually getting married was a huge milestone, you know. And the reason I'm saying this is I got married to my college sweetheart. And I'm a Muslim and she's a Hindu. And everybody said, Firoz, this is a perfect recipe for disaster. And it took me 10 years before both set of parents agreed on the marriage. We both had decided we will only marry when our parents bless us. And it took us 10 years. And, you know, when I look back, I think that has been a huge milestone for both of us, and it's very rare that you get to spend your entire life with someone you love. So I think that was extremely important.
Right.
On a professional front, like you had mentioned in the introduction, I was very fortunate to become the managing director at a very young age. You know, I was 33 when I was heading SAP. I was the first, you know, non-German head of a global multinational in India. And I when I look back, I think becoming a kind of an MD role at a young age had a certain advantage that I was still incredibly idealist.
Correct.
I hadn't become a realist. And so a lot of what we were able to achieve was because I was bold and fearless and still an idealist. I think now I've become a lot more practical and wiser. But I think that was, from a professional point, a very defining moment. And finally, you know, I found my purpose through my son's diagnosis of autism. He's now 11 years old. You know, I was shattered and depressed when his diagnosis happened. But I think through a series of incidences and, you know, great mentors, I converted that into my purpose and mission for life. So I think those three would be probably the three most defining moments of my life.
Fantastic. You know, you're one of the few people who've defined three key milestones which are so personal to you.
Thank you. That's fantastic.
Well done.
Thank you.
So, you know, I want to talk about the India Inclusion Summit.
Yeah.
I know you're very passionate about it.
Yeah.
Tell me about this venture.
So as I said, you know, when my son was diagnosed with autism, he was 18 months old. And, you know, he's my only son, and I went through, everybody goes through this, they call it the five stages of grief, right? Starting from denial to, you know, final acceptance. I went through that, and I was very fortunate that my mentor at that time, two mentors who played a huge role, first was Dr. Kiran Bedi, who actually called me up when I was at the lowest point, and she said, Firoz, beta, what happened? Why are you so silent? You haven't spoken to me. And when I said that, you know, Vivan has been diagnosed with autism, she said something that really changed my life. And she said, Firoz, most people spend their entire life not knowing what their purpose is. You're incredibly fortunate. The purpose found you.
Wow.
And she said, you know, it's not about, while as a parent, your first responsibility is to your child, and that should always be your first responsibility, but you are also in a position of influence. You're also in a position where you have the network and the financial independence to make a difference, not just for your son, but hundreds and thousands of others who are not as fortunate. If you make this your mission for life, you would lead a very fulfilling life. And, you know, that moment, sir, was like a switch. You know, I was treating myself as a victim, and suddenly I was seeing myself as somebody who's given this incredible blessing to make a meaningful difference.
Wow.
But I also didn't know what to do. I mean, it sounds all good, but I don't know what to do. And that's when Arun Shauri said, Firoz, disability is seen as a taboo topic in India. What you could do is make it front and center, let people celebrate people's differences. Mm-hmm. Let's not put a narrative which is about, you know, sad and sympathy, but really celebrate people's differences. And that's when I realized that there was no platform in India and actually across the world where it was focused entirely on disability. Mm-hmm. And that's how in 2012, we started this inclusion summit where we said, this is 2 days of celebration for people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And this year, we celebrated the 9th year. Wow. And is now world's largest platform for people with disabilities.
Incredible. So tell me that, you know, talking about India and certainly about the developing part of the world.
Yeah.
Diversity and inclusion is just about beginning to become relevant.
Yeah.
What can be done, Firoz, to expedite? Because we are all human beings. You know, if there are some challenges that we face, we have to work together to overcome them. And yet, in countries like ours, as you said, it becomes a big challenge. So why is it becoming, you know, how can we expedite the diversity and inclusion?
Absolutely spot on. As I said, when I started my journey, it was in 2012. And I've been very fortunate to have not just traveled the world, but now I'll see what's happening in the US vis-a-vis what's happening in India. And I think India is at least 20 years behind the US. And I'm not saying everything is perfect here, but I think India has a lot of catching up to do.
Correct.
But one thing what I've realized is that true change will only happen, I think, at the intersection of government, nonprofits, and corporates.
Correct.
And that's my big realization, because I kind of have lived a world where I'm a corporate person, I run my own NGO, and I have friends in the government. And the reason I'm saying this is I found that, you know, the nonprofits are doing great work and they lead with compassion, which is important. Mm-hmm. Corporates have the ability to put the right people and the financial bandwidth behind a cause. Mm-hmm. And governments are the only people who can scale.
Correct.
I think the intersection of all these three is where things happen. And I can tell you, and I've seen this personally, the topic of diversity and inclusion took forefront because the corporates led it.
Mm.
You know, it's become a corporate agenda. There is no large multinational which doesn't have a chief diversity and inclusion officer. Mm. But this movement started, I would say, like 5 years back. And now, because corporates led it, it's now become something that is being openly discussed about. So I think true change will only happen when all these three intersect. Mm. And I feel the big challenge now is most of them work on their own. I think the nonprofits are doing great work, but they don't necessarily collaborate with the corporates other than when they want funds.
Mm.
Right? Corporates are only saying, how does it affect my bottom line? And governments are always talking about, how do I make it easy? But really, how do you scale is most important. So I think at the intersection is where true change will happen.
And do you think this intersection will happen in the developing world in a hurry, or is it going to take time?
Unfortunately, I'm sad to say this, but the change is extremely slow in India. And in fact, on 3rd December, just 3 days back, I wrote a whole column in Mint about the 6 reasons why disability has not become a movement in India. And there is a beautiful documentary on Netflix, which is called Crip Camp, which was actually produced by Barack Obama, which I think was nominated for, won the Oscars. It's about the disability movement, how it started. And I think it's a great blueprint of how, when people come together for a cause, you can drive change. And my first thinking is that why it has not happened in India is there is no collective anger. You know, we have all accepted chalta hai attitude. Fine, there's a problem, we'll find a jugaad solution. Right? Theek hai, accessible nahi hai, toh manage kar lenge. Unless there is collective anger, you cannot drive change.
Correct.
Right? Correct. So people find jugaad solution for everything, but that doesn't change systems.
Correct. In fact, I hate this word jugaad. I think it's done more to India than any, you know, terrible word to have. But, you know, I was talking yesterday to someone who has been visually impaired, and he also actually founded the World Blind Cricket Council and led the first Blind Cricket World Cup.
Are you talking about George, sir? George Abraham?
Yes.
Yeah, very dear friend. Very dear friend.
I interviewed him yesterday, and he was telling me that it is not visual impairment which is the challenge. It is the mindset.
Spot on.
Of the other people who's the challenge.
And absolutely what saying, spot on.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. And that's also the hardest to change. You know, you can always build a ramp and, you know, you can do a lot of these symbolic things. But changing mindsets has to come from deep inside you.
Yeah. Very true. So, you know, Feroz, tell me now, what at work, for yourself, what are some of the core values you believe in?
You know, the first thing is I'm a great believer that people are inherently good. Okay. I mean, you know, you have to start. That's how one of my core principles is trust people by default unless proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I must confess there are times where I've been disappointed because I've trusted the wrong people. And I'm kind of, you know, sometimes leaning towards, should I really trust or should I first let them prove before I trust?
Mm-hmm.
And my whole philosophy has been that trust produces speed, right? But it also sometimes can derail you because you've made some bad judgments.
Correct.
But on the larger scope of things, I think I trust people unless proven wrong. So that's been a core principle. The other thing is I'm a huge believer. In fact, my next book is also titled Givers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge believer that being a giver is a good strategy.
Okay.
And it works. And there is a beautiful book by Adam Grant called Give and Take, who's a fellow YGL.
Mm.
And he's proven that even in large corporates, if you're a giver, it has a higher chance of success in the long run. So I'm an inherent believer that it's better to be a giver than a taker or a matcher.
Terrific. And, you know, you've led large companies. You're continuing to lead large businesses. You will continue to get into much bigger corporate roles. What, according to you, are some of the qualities a CEO should have?
You know, it may sound a little cliched, but I think we have to get empathy fashionable. We have to make empathy sexy, because I think sometimes people say empathy is blah, blah stuff. Mm-hmm. But the way I will like to frame is make empathy. You have to lead with empathy at the core,
mm-hmm,
and ambition at the edges.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of people do the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
They lead with ambition at the core and empathy at the edges.
Okay.
And you know, the classic example of two leaders who followed that principle is, you know, Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, and Satya Nadella, CEO of Microsoft. And you can look at any of their speeches or any of their actions.
Mm.
They lead with empathy.
Mm.
Doesn't mean they're not ambitious. They're incredibly ambitious, but ambition is not at the core. Ambition is at the edge. So that's one core belief that I have, that every leader should follow. The second is really good leaders have great clarity of thought.
Mm.
You know, they're clear. They can, you know, they're not clouded in confusion. So clarity of thought helps them make better decisions.
Mm.
And finally, really purity of intent. And this is something for me, being a huge fan of Gandhiji and having studied, you know, his whole idea that purity of intent is the most important thing.
Mm.
It's not just the outcome, but purity of intent is very important. So those are probably some of the principles that I believe.
Very well said. Very well said. And again, as you look at your own role and as you look at your own, you know, large organizations, what would you say is your leadership style?
I think I'd be a little arrogant to say that myself. I maybe it's better if you ask the people who worked with me, right?
But what feedback would they give you?
I think I want to believe that I really follow and believe in a servant leadership style. I am, you know, but I think our styles also evolve with time.
Mm.
I must confess, when I was much younger, when I was, you know, running a large organization, I was not wise enough. I mean, when I look back, I made a lot of mistakes and, you know, a lot of stupid decisions, and I was maybe a little bit arrogant, and now I'm a much more wiser. So I think our styles also evolve with time, right? So it's not fixed.
Right.
You learn. But I would like to believe that I, you know, at least follow a servant leadership style. But again, I don't want to answer that.
Fair enough.
With I would say my team may be able to answer that.
Understand. So we'll move on. Let's talk about your books now.
Yeah.
You know, you've written three books and you just said you're coming on to your fourth one, which is titled Give. But tell me about your first three books.
So the first book was really inspired by the people whom I saw come to the India Inclusion Summit. You know, it's fascinating that every year we have like 15, 20 speakers. And the speaker that got the standing ovation was always the unsung hero. It was never the celebrities. I mean, we always have the big names that attract. But the ones who got the standing ovation with, you know, broke people down were the unsung heroes. And I was always saddened by the fact that these people were not written about. And that's how I wrote my first book, which was called Gifted. And I said, I'll tell the stories of 15 people with disabilities who are not world famous. I mean, you know, they're doing simple stuff, but their stories are such incredible. So that's how I wrote Gifted. My second book was really more business related, called, you know, The Globalization Advantage. And that was basically, I was heading a team where we were building software for the world. And I was really talking about that. You know, the first one became a bestseller, won the Kannada Sahitya Academy Award. The business one obviously was more, you know, targeted audience to specific SAP employees. And the last one was a graphic novel. And I realized I wanted to write a graphic novel primarily because I wanted to reach out to children. And I said, that is a format where children would love to read. I realized that I wasn't reaching the younger generation. So again, I wrote about Major D.P. Singh, who was a very war veteran from Kargil and has a great story. So I said, how do I tell this story to the younger audience? And I wrote it in a graphic novel format.
Very nice. Very nice. And you said the fourth one is coming out.
Yes. In fact, I kind of write like three books in parallel. So the one that I've finished now is actually a blueprint for making India inclusive. You know, I haven't figured out the final title yet, but we finished the manuscript. And the other one, which I'm writing in parallel, is called Givers, Profiles in Generosity, where I'm talking about 15 people whom I think are great givers who are unknown. And my research showed that the best giver, you'll never know who the best giver is, because the best giver is always anonymous.
Giving is something which I have been reading a lot about. And I was on the board of Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, for a long time. And I often wondered, why is it that people in the US are the biggest givers, and Indians are still not mature enough to start giving? And when I say giving, I'm talking of financial giving, not time. What are your thoughts?
Beautiful question. I mean, as I said, there's a lot of data around that. And maybe I'll give you one data about Indians in America, because that's the access that I have. They found that Indians in America give four times more, I'm talking about financial giving, than Indians in India. I mean, these are Indians who live in the US. So that's clear data which shows that somehow people in India are not good at giving financially. But however, my whole narrative is money is just one form of currency. So why do we measure giving only in that one form? And I believe that's a flawed metric itself. And I don't believe that Bill Gates is the biggest giver, or because he's given the most number of amount of money. And I want to kind of change that narrative and say that it's better to give as you go than to first accumulate and then give. Right? So you've accumulated 100 billion and then you give 99 billion. What's the big deal? But if you keep giving as you go, I think it makes more sense. That's first insight. And the most, if there is one takeaway that I would like to have out of the research, it's not about how much you give. It's about how much you're willing to give up. And I say, can Bill Gates, I mean, I'm just giving a name, or Mark Zuckerberg, give up their 100% of their wealth and live a regular life? The answer is no. But there are a lot of people, you know, a beggar on the street sometimes shares the only meal he has with the next person. He's given 50% of everything he had, even though he doesn't know whether he'll go to the next meal. So my belief is that giving is not so much about what you give, but what you're willing to give up.
Well said. So let me move to the last section of our conversation, which is some questions for you personally. My first question, Feroz, is that so much recognition, so much you've achieved, so much you will continue to achieve. What does success mean to Feroz?
You know, I've often spoken about this, and my simple statement is success is overrated. In fact, I teach a subject at Columbia University, and that title is called From Success to Significance. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is success is about yourself, right? You know, what's your position, your salary, your house, your mm-hmm. car? And I'm like, that doesn't really matter. But significance is, what have you done for others? Mm-hmm. And I believe that in the world we live in, success is overrated, significance is underrated. Hmm. And I think we need to flip that. I think we need to start measuring people by what they've done for others and not so much about what they've done for themselves.
Very good. Very nice. My next follow-on question is that where do you draw your inspiration from?
You know, I think there's a good in everybody. So I however cliched it may sound, every time I meet somebody, I learn something. I've learned something from you. But I'm also a voracious reader. So if you see my room is full of books. Yes. So my wife says I consume books, I eat books. I read a lot, and reading gives me a lot of interesting insights. Mm. But I also try to meet as many people as I can. So I get energy from a lot of different sources.
Wonderful. My next question to you is on failure. And this is my my second last question to you.
Sure.
I have a book coming out on failure in February. I've often said that in South Asia, parents don't teach their children it's okay to fail. It's always come first, be a first head of the queue, and it manifests itself in our behavior patterns. And yet we fail all the time. So my question to you is, what have been your biggest learnings from some of your biggest mistakes or failures?
So my big learning, and some of them huge failures, and I don't have the time to go through it in detail, but are there two key learnings? The first is that pain dilutes ego, because failure is always painful.
Correct.
Okay. But pain is the only way that dilutes your ego. And as I said, I thought I was successful when I was young, but it also sometimes makes you a little arrogant and cocky. Mm. But as soon as you fail, it really dilutes your ego, right? Mm. And I think every successful person has a healthy sense of ego. Mm. But I think pain dilutes ego. That's my first learning. Mm. And my second learning is that, humility comes when you know that you are not in control. Mm. Well said. What power does is that it makes you feel that you are in control. Mm. When I was leading organizations and a lot of people, I felt that, I could control the outcome. Mm. And there were many instances when I quickly realized I could not. Mm. That made me humble.
Okay.
So humility comes when you know that you are not in control.
Fantastic. And Feroz, my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of young people who will watch our conversation and will hear you speak, someone who's really gone to very high levels at a very young age. What would your advice be to a young individual starting off on their corporate journey?
I've said this, it doesn't matter whether you're starting on a corporate journey or any journey in life. And my core thinking has been, I see my role to be that of lifting others, mm-hmm. right? Now, you don't have to be a manager to be able to lift others. I think you can do that to your friend, you can do that to your spouse, to your neighbor. But if you keep that intention in mind, mm-hmm. I think you're going to go places.
Wonderful.
Right? And maybe much more practical advice is surround yourself with good people and good books.
Great. That's well said.
That's it.
Well said. Feroz, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I wish you the India Inclusion Summit and everything that you're doing with your employer SAP lots and lots of success.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm such an honor to be speaking to you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You videocast and podcast.
platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.